The Big Red Couch, a podcast about making role-playing games. A group of GMs and players draw ideas from the mystery box and bring their game pitches to you.
Good morning, listener, and welcome to episode 52 of The Big Red Couch. Today on the microphone, from the manor, we have
Ben.
And from way the hell on the other side of the world, we have Charlie. And John.
Good morning. Afternoon here, actually.
And I'm Craig, but who really gives a rat's ass about that? Our prompt for today comes to us from serial contributor Taz and reads, "Bwahahaha, it only hurts when I laugh." Well, that went better than expected. Nice.
Yeah, Taz, we'll get you. We will get you one day.
Yeah, this one was hard. As I already told everybody else, I don't actually have an idea, so...
So you're mostly going to be dancing around the edges throwing things at other people's?
Yes, like a Canadian howler monkey, which isn't a thing that exists, but...
It does now.
I don't know, I'm imagining, if we're going with stereotypes, I'm imagining it as a howler monkey that still howls, but only does it at convenient hours and is apologetic about it.
Sounds about right.
So... We have a new person on the cast in the form of Charlie, who I'm hoping could give us a bit of a blurb as to what went wrong in your life that meant that you showed up on this show.
I met Kevin.
It's a sad but oft-repeated tale.
I know Kevin and John from a StarCraft forum from many moons ago. And for some reason, Kevin thought it would be a good idea for me to share the horrible goings-on in my mind on a podcast.
It's important to get that stuff out there. Otherwise, you know, who knows what can happen with it.
I'm reminded of a quote that I think was from Kevin many decades ago or something, where he proposed starting a paper he had to write with, "I want to do this paper because my therapist says it's better than having me out in the streets stabbing people again."
The again is important.
Yeah. The again really finishes it off. Yeah.
That's one of those all-purpose joke things. You can make anything funnier, at least many things funnier, by adding again at the end of whatever horrible thing you're proposing.
That is true. Okay, and Charlie, are you a tabletop gamer as well, or you've managed to avoid that particular infection?
I'm a tabletop gamer. I'm currently in two Pathfinder games, and I'm fiddling about a pensioner-friendly tabletop design at the moment. My grandparents foolishly expressed an interest in Pathfinder because I mentioned that I played it, and now next time I go to England, I have to DM a game for them. But there are too many numbers.
The fact that you have to go back to England to run a game for your grandparents is kind of awesome.
They're very big on sharing in their grandchildren's interests, even if that means pretending to be a busty, you know, blonde warrior who stabs things a lot, which I think was what my granddad said he wanted to be.
Bless him. That's what I say.
There's an entire era of fantasy gaming and artwork and literature out there just for him.
Yep.
did he own an airbrushed van in the 60s? 70s, whatever that would have been appropriate?
No, he was a mod.
I don't know what that means.
He wore very nice suits and had a comb for his hair at all times.
And pointy shoes?
Very pointy shoes.
Yeah.
Kind of the other side of the rock movement at the time in the UK, yes?
Yeah. So just imagine that, but chainmail bikini also. Over the suit.
Because if it's under the suit, you just can't see it, and it's meaningless.
And would mess up the line of the suit, which
exactly
wouldn't have been a good thing.
It would be terrible.
You'd have to get it specially tailored to look at, to work if you had it under the suit. You'd have to get the suit made specially.
You'd be able to do that, I'm sure.
But you could work chainmail into the design, maybe have helmets as kind of a sort of a coiffed pompadour kind of thing at the front instead of a quill, like a fan of and stuff. Yeah, it could work. Riding around their mopeds with lances.
It's a powerfully strange image, but...
I kind of want to see that movie.
There was a British show, and I think a terrible revived movie in the early 2000s or the 90s called The Mod Squad. And I mean, if you wanted to revive it again, you could just do it that way.
No, I think that would work.
It's just people in suits with lances on mopeds 24/7.
Well, if it's a British series, it will be an hour and a half per episode, but only 4 episodes a season. So it will be quality.
Yeah. Then we'll give it to Stephen Moffat and it'll turn to shit.
Oh, absolutely.
Ooh, shots fired.
Indeed. I mean, this is not me disagreeing with you. I think the man can write fantastic episodes, but I'm not overly impressed by his show running.
Yeah. Actually, I just bring it up because I'm trying to, like, get you sent hate mail for my opinions.
Oh, fair enough. That's bigredcouch@horde.net. That's horde.net. Let's see if you can make it through the spam filter. God knows everything else does, so you've got a pretty good shot.
But where would you get all your card ideas if the spam filter worked?
We're not in danger of running out of card ideas. I mean, I haven't added it up since episode 50, but I've added some cards since then, and we were already good till 2017. I don't think drawing the last card is going to be an issue, ever.
Excellent. Incidentally, I know it isn't the actual anniversary because of the extra episodes, but since this is episode 52, that's enough episodes for 2 years if you hadn't done weird half episodes in the middle, yeah. Which is sort of an anniversary in a very twisted sense.
The regularversary or something.
Holy crap. I had not noticed that. It just, wow, 2 years worth of regular episodes. Not sure how that happened.
It was all kind of a blur from one day I was listening to episode 12 and sort of felt blacked out, and then suddenly I'm here. I don't know what happened.
So the subliminals are working, finally. Man, that took ages.
Yeah. Incidentally, never go back to Campeche.
What?
Oh, you will have done some things under the influence of the subliminals. They won't be happy. It's fine.
I don't even know where Campeche is.
I'm not sure it exists anymore. So did anybody actually have an idea for It Only Hurts When I Laugh?
Please dub in some crickets there.
Or cicadas, depending on where you are. I've just come up with an idea.
By just, do you mean recently, or today, or as you were saying that sentence?
I can't smudge the ink. It is Biro, so it's a little bit.
Fair enough. I also have an idea. I mean, what's going to be interesting is to see whether people end up with very much the same idea, because that's always funny.
Although it rarely happens, even when you've all seemed very convinced that it will.
Yeah, it was something we were extremely worried about at the start of things, and then realized over time that the ideas we think are incredibly obvious are only incredibly obvious to us, and everybody else thinks that they're just completely insane.
Yep.
That might just be me, but, or at least what happens to my ideas?
Yes, we are not very imaginative about how imaginative we are.
Yeah, if you guys go, I may end up thinking of something by the end of the episode, but...
We can only dream.
So I've got an idea that's been spurred by what we've been discussing so far. I can kick it off if you like.
Works for me.
All right. So, Bwahaha. Supervillains, obviously. It Only Hurts When I Laugh speaks to being somehow infirm and somehow, you know, maybe a bit decrepit. And so the notion that I got was of a retirement home for supervillains. It might be more of a prison, kind of, but maybe it's a slightly gentrified one where, you know, these folks are old. Magneto, or his equivalent, doesn't bend things or, you know, vaguely levitate things anymore. Everyone's sort of running down. Clearly they were bad people, but no one has the heart to, like, properly imprison them anymore. They've somewhat served out whatever crimes they've committed, and, you know, they paid their debt to society, but they're still, in their hearts, supervillains. And they conspire in this lovely, airy, placid rest home to pull one last caper. So basically this is the film Bubba Hotep with really unreliable superpowers.
I never saw that one. I was thinking of the two recent ones that, as I understand it, are kind of similar on the non-superpowered hero side, Red and the Expendables, that are both like the team of like old action people that have to do something.
Right, right.
I haven't actually seen those either, but I gather that's sort of what's going on in them. And, you know, meta, they use as an excuse to bring out all the old action stars. But in this case, Yeah, I like the idea of the old washed up supervillains trying to do something.
I also remember a movie I saw many years ago about a bunch of people in an old folks home who effectively hijack a train and try to escape. I think they may have been running away to Canada.
Of course.
Bonus points if they hijacked the train in England and were trying to get to Canada.
That well, just shows dedication.
Go across the ocean, no problem. It works out.
Yeah, yeah, if there's supervillains involved, if it's Magneto, that's actually plausible.
Yeah. Well, if we just wait for somebody to build that goddamn Bering Strait rail bridge.
Because everybody wants to travel between Alaska and Siberia. Yeah. Those two hubs of human habitation.
If we put in a walking path and a cycleway, it'll work. Okay, so retired and slightly crap supervillains.
Yes, and the idea that they have to negotiate problems like the staff, who are quite familiar with the tricks these old dears get up to and so forth.
There's a couple of possibilities too. Like, there's a staff, and then, like, if it goes on further, there's presumably the rival retirement home for aged superheroes. There's the honorable one for the retired superheroes. Then this is like Springfield Retirement Prison. And they're not actually really any different in any substantial way. They're just both bare bones, like look exactly like any stereotypical type of arrest of a retirement home. You'd be resisted in sort of an equally ineffective way by the retired superheroes who also have to get around their own staff to try and fight crime.
Of course.
Is anybody else imagining Cyclops with cataracts, or is it just me?
I am now. Wouldn't the cataracts just get burned through immediately?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it would work. I'm imagining the scattering effect.
Because, like, his eyes never stop shooting those beams. The goggles he wears just contain them, so how would the cataract even form?
Good point.
Although, if we start thinking too much about physics, it's just going to fall apart entirely, but...
Yes. On the other hand, if his ability to focus is off, you might get this less laser-like and more diffuse shotgun-like blast.
But again, the goggles are what focuses it. Like, doesn't he dial that with the goggles anyway?
Maybe his prescription's off because he's so incredibly old.
Or like he's having trouble because he needs reading glasses now. So he has this other set of enormous corrective goggles that have to fit over.
He has bifocals, and it's just a bad scene.
It's fine as long as you don't hit the join. Then it all goes to hell.
He shoots his eye beams out of the wrong part of the glasses, and it looks like the Dark Side of the Moon cover. And I was also thinking like you've got a great cast of like interactions that could happen with us. There's the retired superheroes, and there's clearly like the current new generation of supervillains and superheroes.
They have no clue who these old people are.
Or like some of them do, and like maybe some of them are legendary. And like as you go down the generations, like you know you're the retired one, and like the guy who's currently the most respected superhero who's like, you know, 40, he's, you know, establishing his career, he remembers, but then, like, the young up-and-comers who are, like, the teenagers are like, who the hell's that old dude? And, you encounter them at different times. There's new supervillains trying plans, and you're like, oh, for God's sake, I tried that 30 years ago. It didn't work then. It's not going to work now. You can't put that many mind-controlled eels in the water supply. It just doesn't work.
Did you have a thought as to system, Ben?
No, none at all.
I will channel Kevin and just yell, fate.
That seems fair.
That would be flexible enough. The only thing that I know of is a Monster Hearts hack called Elder Hearts. It's not about Cthulhu. It's about older people having relationships.
I was going to ask whether it was a Cthulhu thing.
So it's Monster Hearts.
Monster Hearts is a Apocalypse World hack in which effectively you're playing dysfunctional teenagers. But the dysfunctional teenageness is expressed as various types of supernatural monster. So it's a bit like playing Twilight, but with way more focus on the emotional aspects of the monsterism.
Okay. Also, I'm finally excited with all the times you've mentioned Apocalypse World that I actually now recently know what that is and sort of how it plays.
Oh.
It's because I've been playing a different Apocalypse World hack, Urban Shadows.
Don't know that one.
It's sort of Dresden Files with the serial numbers filed off.
Oh, cool.
intended to be more political stuff, although the way we've played it, there's been like no politics whatsoever. A lot of the mechanics are based around debts, like owing and calling in, and like they're generated and used by a lot of the things you do in the game.
Yes, that makes perfect sense for both the system and the style.
Yes, I have not yet gotten to play Apocalypse World, but do want to, if only so that I can look at the various Apocalypse World hacks I've seen out there and tell whether this is actually a completed game or something that got abandoned halfway through, because I have no idea.
Some of them are very lightweight, it has to be said. Some of them don't have. But I kickstarted one called Night Witches, which is the Apocalypse. I participated in the Kickstarter, to be more specific. But it's about the women's Russian World War II squadron of night bombing. That did night bombing raids over the Eastern Front in terrible, crappy, ancient, antiquated planes, and occasionally with railway ties rather than bombs because they're running out of things.
What did they drop? Why were they dropping railway ties? What did that accomplish?
Anything heavy dropped from the air will cause some damage.
I guess if you hit something directly, like you're trying to hit a... Yeah, okay.
If you remember MASH at all, there was the 12 o'clock Charlie who would arrive and drop a single bomb nowhere near the camp and leave. They did this at night and were way more accurate, and Jim were flying like effectively trainers, aircraft that could travel lower and almost silently. So they would turn up, things would explode, and they would leave before and anything could be scrambled to intercept them. However, it was horrifically dangerous, and it's kind of the tension in the game. They're not quite taken seriously. They're working in terrifying conditions. It's quite a cool notion.
I read something about this just like a few weeks ago, and I can't remember where. Must have been, maybe it was something Kate Beaton linked to on Twitter or something. Were they one of the groups that had the planes that were so crappy that the German fighters couldn't really engage them because the German fighters were too fast?
Pretty much, yeah. Their cruising speed was below the stall speed of most modern aircraft at the time.
Which is the sort of thing that I didn't realize was ever a real problem when I saw it as a joke on The Simpsons.
The Simpsons had a go at that one?
They were not the Night Witches thing, but there's a bit where Sideshow Bob steals the Wright brothers' plane and the Air Force tries to intercept them and just blows right past them. So they just target speed too slow for intercept. Suggest we get out and walk. And the next scene is just the Wright brothers' plane flying around with like three Air Force pilots just like lightly jogging behind it on the ground trying to catch it.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Nice.
This is reminding me of a conversation in a bar the other day where a random man came up to us and started talking about mosquitoes and how Canadian pilots saved us in World War II. We didn't know who us was because he clearly wasn't Canadian. And for half an hour, he kept going back to mosquitoes and how they were the perfect plane. So we just left.
Okay.
What? I don't even know what plane that was.
My history knowledge is failing me. That he was just, making up words and trying to be friends. But now every time someone talks about, World War II or planes, I kind of drift back to that lovely evening.
People do get very passionate about the subject. It is true.
Especially when drinking, it seems.
Oh, yes.
So apparently Canadian pilots in mosquitoes, or possibly riding mosquitoes.
Possibly deploying mosquitoes? Like, did we try to give the Germans malaria?
I wouldn't put it past you.
I know they tried a lot of really, really weird pseudo-biological weapons, like using animals and stuff in World War II that almost never worked.
Mm.
Like the famous British Russian bomb dogs and the American attempt at incendiary bats.
I knew about the bomb dogs. I didn't know about the incendiary bats and de Havilland mosquito.
Oh, yeah.
I remembered something.
Ah.
wooden, constructed almost entirely out of wood, fast bomber from the,
That's not as fun as Canadians riding giant, like, mutated mosquitoes into battle.
That is true.
The Canadians are coming on their terrifying war mosquitoes.
Yeah.
I like that more, yeah.
So that's somebody's pitch for this theme, right? that counts.
You want it?
or you could just throw that on another card. The Canadians on their war mosquitoes. See what comes of that in 2026.
Yes. Oh God.
You'll never escaping from this podcast. It's forever.
Apparently, yeah.
When you're in your supervillain retirement home, you'll still have to put out episodes.
But I'm hoping by that time the technology will have caught up to the point where it's like, okay, we've recorded it. I'll hit the edit button, and that's it.
Yes.
And my personal AI will edit it for me.
Yeah.
You'll be in a retirement home, so the technology will be far too new, and you won't like it, and you'll go back to what you know, which is what you're doing now.
That is distressingly accurate, yes.
Yeah. Though the possibility of retirement home role-playing, it's not forever away now, I feel, at least for myself and Craig. It's like, well, what sort of games will people play? Will they fall back to the tried and true?
It'd be kind of like being back, in some ways it'd be like being back in high school again, of having a fairly regular group without a lot of demands on their free time.
Mm.
And the ability to use a shuffleboard court as some kind of randomizer.
It's true.
I've never played shuffleboard. I just want to. You could use lawn bowls.
Or you could just go really crazy and use dice.
Seems a bit weird.
At that point, no dice won't exist. Everyone will just have dice apps on their smartphones.
Enormous smartphones.
That's what we had to do. We had a session on Monday, and our GM just forgot to bring dice. So all of us just at the table installed dice apps on our phones and used that for the evening.
I used to have one that you had to shake to roll the dice. That was amusing for about the first 5 minutes and then really annoying afterwards.
Yeah, mine has that. It's like, and you can shake the phone to roll the dice. I'm like, no, I'm pressing the button. That's why it's a phone. I'm not doing it the hard way.
All right. Well, who wants to go next?
Well, I have something, but I don't know if it's, you know... Again, it's that worry that someone else has come up with something similar.
If you get in first, then they are the talentless hack who copies you.
Well, since my supervillain retirement home idea has already been used.
Oh!
Sorry.
I did have it's kind of a monster idea more than anything, and then depending on, you know, how big you want to take this concept of a monster, it can then become massive plot line junk. So the card, wahahaha, it only hurts when I laugh, it has a capital I, which to me said that it is a thing, and it is its name, potentially. So I thought maybe there's this monster that feeds off of the joy of the people around it. And then, you know, eventually once it's fed off their joy, they die in horrendous pain, but also very happy. So I was trying to think of how to make this a plot mechanic. And the idea was that maybe when it was young and stupid, it did just suck the joy out of people. And then it got, you know, imprisoned by some random adventurers or what have you. And now it's a bit older and it's freed itself and it's thinking, well, no, I need to make this a long-term thing. So it goes into politics.
I was going to think it sets up an amusement park or something just to generate a constant loop of joy.
Well, see, that's kind of the thing I had, where the whole way you can go with the monster is, what does it do to generate enough joy to feed off without drawing enough attention to itself that people are going to, you know, try to kill it or lock it away again.
So, it's, It's the alternate happy version of the glowy creature from that original series Star Trek episode that started turning things into swords because it fed off like anger and violence.
Ooh.
The Day of the Dove.
Ah.
It arranged for some Klingons to be trapped on the Enterprise and then just started turning objects into swords and making people angry at each other so they'd fight. This is like the happier version of that.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking if it infects individuals who then become important, but who are also responsible for, you know, the well-being of the people around them. So, you know, politicians, teachers, you know, whoever is responsible for just looking after people. And so,
I like the idea of if you, what am I thinking of this? If you had the players be like multiple monsters like this or people that are sort of disciples of it, I just liking to think of the challenge of, as a politician, trying to create joy. because I know a few people who are at least somewhat involved in politics, and they're good people, but trying to do anything within that system to generate joy would be difficult to impossible.
Well, I think it's one of those things where, you know, in a, say you're in a random generic fantasy world and you're just the mayor of your town. You introduce, all the best bits of, socialism. So, you know, healthcare, education, all this, and the quality of life in this town just goes right the way up. And then everyone's life expectancy is still quite low because at the age of 45 or something, say their child gets married, it's the happiest day of their life, die in incredible pain. This is
some people. That would be an interesting, like, weird village to stumble upon in an RPG.
Yeah, and so you've got, I don't know, maybe whoever discovers this, they have to try and find a way to, I don't know, stop this thing, but maybe the people don't want it to stop because actually they have all these lovely things going on in their life that they don't want to get rid of, and maybe the trade-off of dying young and horrendously is okay for them.
You just got to get them to understand that they can still enact these government policies without the monster out there.
Yeah. So it's basically, I'm kind of saying it out loud. I feel like I'm giving all the people who hate Obamacare yet another ridiculous conspiracy.
I was worried about, yes, the kind of the libertarian angle on the whole thing.
I am very much, you know, everyone should have free everything.
This is also like this is a village that you would stumble upon in your fantasy RPG, or this is a planet that Captain Kirk would visit and kill the giant computer that's running everything.
Yeah,
this is another one of those.
Make a fantastic Doctor Who episode.
It would.
Two observations. One of the things that would tip you off is the only person who is old in this place is the habitually miserable person.
Yep.
Why is this guy the only one?
Yeah, or just maybe there's more than one, but it's just like, why are all the old people just like angry at everything for no reason?
Just so you can track. It's really weird. All these young, happy people. It's a bit Logan's Run, but and if you're going to call the creature anything, I'd suggest Schadenfreude.
But it's sort of the opposite. That's joy in other people's misery. The creature feeds on joy.
Yeah, it's a joy that is bad for you.
Okay. Yeah.
There is
the Germans probably have a specific word for that, but I don't know what it is.
No, I think that's what Schadenfreude means literally.
Okay, joy that is bad for you.
Well, bad joy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
okay, but yeah, it's just confusing because we've adopted the word into English to mean something else than just that literal translation.
Oh, it probably means that's probably means precisely that, but if you're going to mess with it,
yeah.
Cool.
So I do want to bring back, like, think through the alternate way I thought of branching with that, where the players are this monsters, like multiple of the same monster, or, you know, its disciples. And in a modern context, how do you, like, you find yourself in the regular modern levers of power, and you're trying to create a bunch of joy, and like you're just like the leadership of one of the political parties in power in your country, and you're just like, well, how do I do anything useful for this purpose?
Huh.
And it's like, well, we'll give everybody free health. It'd be just like that scene from, again, just everything's The Simpsons, when the two aliens are impersonating Clinton and Bob Dole. And then he's like, abortions for all. Boo. Abortions for none. Boo. Like, everything you do is just booed. Like, we'll give we will give everybody completely free healthcare. And like, boo, you know. Okay. Then the healthcare will be entirely the free market. Boo. What?
What do you people want?
Dance! Dance for us! I don't even know.
In a modern setting, either as protagonists or antagonists, I could see the terrible stand-up comedian being an option. Or Jeremy Clarkson. I don't know. A hit? A palpable hit?
They wouldn't have to necessarily go into politics, though, in a modern context, because there are plenty of other jobs where, say, they were in politics, they realised it would be so much easier if I became a pop star. Mm. But they're really like 55, very wizened and
terrible. I was thinking of...
try anyway.
The politics thing, I was thinking, if like it was a recently arrived alien-type creature that just says, well, of course, the easiest way to affect the world is to like seize the levers of national power. And then they just get into the system like, what the
Everything grinds to a halt and it dies of starvation in a week.
No, but see, while they're in the system, like the people around them, a lot of people in politics just sort of derive joy from screwing people over. You know, there's joy within the system for very perverse reasons. It's, you know, sort of enough to sustain them, but their actual goal is just like they're in completely the wrong place to even attempt to achieve it.
So over time, depending on how quickly that sucking the joy out of people thing works, you've got the circumstance of monster goes into politics. And then over a period of time, all of the people who are deriving joy from screwing people over and being complete bastards are just dying horribly with huge grins on their faces in their offices.
Yeah, like,
and it's in fact improving the political system by accident.
Yeah, all the most sociopathic ones die first. Like the guy from House of Cards is just like lasts an hour. What's his the guy who now plays the doctor? His character on whatever his previous show was, where he was the spin doctor, or whatever. He doesn't last very long, probably.
Oh, I know the show you mean, though I can't
remember. Malcolm Tucker was the character's name, I think, but I've forgotten the show's name. In the Loop.
That'd be the... Yeah. I mean, that one's very... That version would very much be political revenge fantasy the RPG.
Yeah.
Because if I was running it, the temptation to set the thing in... To set the thing in New Zealand politics, just so that you could blatantly kill off all the politicians you hate...
It's the modern Dante's Inferno.
It would have the rollover effect of once all of the arseholes in politics are dead, everyone else is happy.
Mm. Or else.
So they'd be achieving their goal indirectly. Like they, you know, they're like, well, we're in the government now. We can enact policies to make the population joyous, and it doesn't work very well, but the population is still getting happier because, you know,
they're not
the worst people in power aren't there anymore. It's not even like the direct, oh, we're not getting screwed over. There's, I mean, it's somewhat horrible, but, you know, there are politicians that if they just died of a heart attack tomorrow, a lot of people would just be like, I feel good about this. I feel guilty, but I feel good about this.
Kevin has just cropped up.
Hello.
It's Hello.
Kevin. I'm disrupting everything. Hooray.
No, it's good, because ideas are thin on the ground here, so...
Indeed.
Are you kidding me? We've had the supervillain retirement acres, and we have had a joy-sucking monster who goes into politics to make the world a better place.
I was going to describe it as Elder Abuse and UKIP, but yeah, maybe.
I got very little sleep last night, so my ideas may make even less sense than normal, but this sounds impressive.
Well, since you've arrived, do you want to go next?
Okay. I had two vague ideas that there's only one that I can currently remember, so we'll see if the other one turns up while I talk about it. But the first idea that I had for It Hurts When I Laugh is a fiasco scenario that is basically set in a circus. And we begin it's basically a bleakly comic Coen Brothers scenario that begins with a circus clown who has been shot, who is our shared narrator, walking us through the terrible and stupid events that bring us to this pass.
I'm now imagining Carlito's Way, but with a clown, and that's not going well in my head.
Little bit. I mean, I'm stealing the opening thing directly from a noir film called Double Indemnity, where our noir narrator it has been shot and is basically bringing us to the point where that all makes sense, except specifically playing off the difference between the happy and exciting circus environment and the horrible things people are doing within it. I'm trying to think the kind of things that you could do with that. Possibly some kind of circus smuggling ring that all goes catastrophically wrong as they're traveling international borders.
Well, the nice thing with Fiasco is if you get the tables sorted out, every game will be different anyway. So sometimes it'll be smuggling. Sometimes it could be that what they're doing is smuggling circus animals.
Ooh.
It's a bit like the bicycle smuggling joke, but
what's the bicycle smuggling joke?
the gist of it is that you've got somebody who every day is crossing a border somewhere in Eastern Europe, and he crosses the border on his bicycle every day, and the guard searches him every day, and he's got goods for sale, but he's never smuggling anything. And then it's the last day, he's retiring, and the guard says, "Come on, you must have been smuggling something. What were you smuggling?" And as the guy walks away, he says, "Bicycles."
But how did he get back across the border the other direction without a bicycle?
You may be overthinking this.
this joke is implausible.
I demand a better joke.
Yeah.
Because, I was thinking, if the circus is smuggling circus animals, they'd be running out of animals, and it would be very visible if the circus had fewer animals.
If they're doing a sort of back and forth enough, then they start out with a whole lot of animals, and then over time they're gradually replaced by a couple of people in a lion costume. Or three guys in a pantomime camel outfit.
Or they're going between, like, significantly different enough areas that they just switch back and forth between which animals are exotic in which location. So they're like, they're smuggling like giraffes to Canada and then smuggling raccoons back to Africa. I don't know.
Ah, for that lucrative African raccoon market. Yes, I've heard about this.
Supply and demand. The essence of foreign trade. Some things are more easily available in certain locations.
I like this. You should go.
Yeah, I'm just imagining here. They're smuggling beavers out of Canada to build dams in Africa. We're not sure where they get the water from, but
for irrigating fields. They want beavers to build dams because it's more economical than doing it themselves.
It adds a humanitarian angle to the noir circus.
Yes. Yes. Well, amazing.
Charity purposes.
Yes.
Almost too easy.
Well, there's a couple of the different angles we could take with the humanitarian thing, because there's been a number of circuses that have either been shutting down or changing focus as they come under increased scrutiny for whether the existence of the circus counts as animal cruelty. And so we could play up something where theoretically we're doing a kind of Project X story about people in the circus trying to get the animals over a border before the animals become illegal so that they can be taken somewhere nicer rather than kind of confiscated and just rehomed. And so this could be a really heartwarming story, and everyone playing the game is aware that this could be a heartwarming heroic story. It's just that they're playing up that all of the people playing the roles in the heroic heartwarming story are circus escapees from a Coen Brothers film, and everything's going horribly wrong.
I am imagining circus animals disguised as different circus animals. So you've got somebody who's painted a zebra and pretending it's a donkey.
Yes.
I just have, again, everything reminds me of The Simpsons, and I'm just, it's not even a circus thing, but it's similar. I just had that vision of the background visual gag where it's just two guys running across the field, like with a killer whale on their shoulders that they're trying to smuggle somewhere.
That's brilliant. I kind of have this idea of you know, there's social stuff happening. They're getting past some kind of encounter where, like, somebody passing on the road asked what all these horses were doing out so late at night, and it's a series of elephants painted like the night sky, but with little horse emblems on the side. There's something completely ridiculous. And
in my mind, somebody like the old guy is a World War II Navy veteran. And yes. His idea is to do dazzle paint on the elephants. So there's just elephants walking around with these elaborate multicolored geometric shapes to disguise their shape from a distance, so you can't tell what kind of animal they are.
I just like the idea that they're getting a largely free pass because people associate the circus with zany stupidity, and except you've also got the Coen Brothers thing. So we finally successfully get our way past, or you know, we've persuaded somebody that everything's okay, and then in the middle of the night, and then you just hear this thwatch noise, and you've got a panicky clown who's bludgeoned somebody with a crowbar and say, what are you doing? Says, he made us. He was laughing at me. Says, yes, but that's because our story is stupid. He doesn't know who you are, you idiot. And, you know, basically embrace the whole girl genius thing of this is one of those plans. You mean those plans for people to notice that we keep murdering anyone who notice our terrible plans? Yeah.
How do those plans always end?
That's more or less most of the RPG campaigns I've ever played in. Just get an expanding series of murders to try and
cover up the previous series.
Cover up or at least negate the consequences of the previous murders.
Yeah, I there was a term in one of the campaigns that was referred to as dwarf stealth, which was, you know, the absence of stealth in any way.
Or like, what was the campaign I'm in now where some NPC said I should definitely go and kill another NPC because he was up to no good. And then I went to the second NPC. He seemed too strong, so I just killed the first NPC instead.
There is a reason certain styles of campaign describe the effects of player characters on a kind of social ecosystem as murder hobos.
Yep. In my defense, they were just both like rival gang leaders. Neither of them were actually good people.
It reminds me of several stories that I've heard. They kind of encapsulate RPG problem solving, and that there was a vampire game where somebody was trying to take a body back to be studied or something, and so crawled out of this storm grating in the road, and basically did no checks whatsoever as to where they were, and so popped out of this guy popped out of a sewer carrying a body that was obviously a body in outside a movie theater with people queuing to get inside. and basically tried to cover what had happened by yelling, somebody get a doctor, this man's dead.
I have an idea that I could throw at people. I was worried that the supervillain retirement home was going to trample all over it, but fortunately it did not. Because
we didn't do our job correctly.
I can only think of one instance where somebody completely hulled another person's idea on the show in 50 plus episodes. I can't remember which one it was, but there was somebody was talking about an idea, and there's just this: "You sunk my battleship." I think it could have been I'd hulled one of Ben's ideas, or Ben hulled one of mine, or something.
We can excuse ourselves for not remembering 50 plus episodes precisely.
Indeed. I mean, it's not like we pay much attention and when we're recording them, and you've all heard the editing, so you know how much care and attention goes into that one. okay, I looked at It Only Hurts When I Laugh and remembered the British comedy show Only When I Laugh, which was set in a hospital. And so I sort of kicked that around and tried to come up with a game, a comedy game set where the players are long-stay patients in a hospital, because that was basically the shtick of Only When I Laugh. And I couldn't quite make that work, but I also went in the supervillain, deranged engineer, minion line. In this case, it is an inpatient treatment hospital for mad scientists / engineers, that sort of person. Basically, the technologically advanced villains. And it's a treatment hospital, and the patients are getting better, at least for the most part.
Do you mean like a mental hospital, or is it their own, like, for injuries they've inflicted on themselves and their schemes?
I think it's a mental hospital. Okay. This is a place where once you have captured, Dr. Doom, you have diffused the various devices, and you've now faced with the problem of trying to make Dr. Doom less dangerous.
So it's a non-horrible Arkham Asylum.
Indeed, yeah. Okay. They're actually trying to get these people mentally well, and the people are, to a greater or lesser extent, trying to cooperate with this process. And the patients are getting better for the most part. The trouble is that their responses to the problems that they see around them aren't always good ideas. Yeah, they've got patterns of behavior that don't necessarily work that well outside of a supervillainy context.
Mm.
And as an added complication, you've got all of this unparalleled genius in the one place, which is very, very tempting for anybody on the outside who has a problem that could just be solved. You know, they're pretty sure that 5 minutes work by Dr. Doom or Dr. Robotnik would be just what they need to solve this problem. So all they really need to do is break into this facility and ask questions of, or maybe kidnap, said recovering supervillain. You know, flipping it around, maybe you're a government. Maybe you're even the government of the country in which the facility is based. And you've got some problems that you're pretty confident some high-end supervillainy thought could solve. And there's that resource just sitting there.
The problem, of course, is you ask them to solve, a drought issue in some state or whatever, and they solve it, but the solution somehow involves a giant robot that's heavily armed, and they didn't even realize they were arming it. They're just so used to doing it that way.
That's pretty much what I'm thinking, yeah. That if I can see this game going in a few different directions, but I'm looking at either you're playing a bunch of supervillains who essentially just want to get better and are constantly beset by these idiots trying to break you out and kidnap you and everything. And of course, every time you get broken out, there's always going to be that suspicion of, okay, what if he was just faking it, biding his time, and this is actually a prearranged escape attempt?
Hmm.
Or failing that, if you want to go with the out-and-out comedy, then, yeah, it's the, all right, we've been faced with the task of trying to solve this drought issue. So we're going to need a really big robot and an enormous laser.
Yeah. You could also keep it more within the hospital and, like, have the players play the staff or something, trying to deal with them. I'm imagining things like, the snack vending machine is broken, and staff like, okay, we'll call maintenance. Somebody will be here tomorrow. And then they look back in an hour and somebody's taken it on themselves to fix the vending machine, and it works perfectly. And it's emitting a lot of gamma rays for some reason.
And the cold drinks are much colder.
Yes.
At absolute zero.
Yeah.
You're not sure why.
Reminds me a little bit of in 52, all of DP's sort of supervillain geniuses all got brought to an island, and for the most part they were just dicking around on their own project. And one of them, I think he was the guy who invented the metal men, just was being encouraged not to take his medication, because when he's off his medication, he makes his best stuff. When he's on his medication, he has moral compass, and so does not. But they all got brought there ultimately to create something for someone, but they were having so much fun with the unlimited resources that the island gave them that they just went, no, I'm going to continue working on my bullshit egg-themed, like, world takeover scheme or something.
That is a really cool idea. I mean, the thing that struck me with the vending machine, I kind of like the idea of possibly playing the staff, and kind of the ideal would be to make sure that the mad scientists were sympathetic NPCs who were, you know, it was obvious that they were trying to get better, so that you have somebody who's gone and fixed the vending machine, and then very rapidly afterwards there are barricades set up nearby because the vending machine has figured out that it has the supply and can make the demand and is trying to take over the hospital and is firing really high-speed drinks at anyone who approaches without money. And basically the characters learn about this because the mad scientist involved runs up to them and says, I fixed the vending machine, but it turns out that it's completely amoral. I've been trying to teach it a decent way of engaging with society, and the players say, well, what went wrong? Consider the source. I'm really bad at that.
And so somebody else is trying to have like a Kirk style logic debate with the vending machine to see if it like to see if they can crash the vending machine with a logical paradox, and it's not working. It's just firing like bottles of Coke at them.
Yes.
Maybe Bruce Willis to negotiate with it.
That would probably be the end result, because what keeps happening when the mad scientist who invents it talks to it is that the mad scientist will say something about society having a benefit, and you know, being about shared resources, and the machine will start talking about that in nature, you know, it's red in tooth and claw, and the mad scientist says, you have a good point, and everyone's going, no, Dave, we talked about this.
Meanwhile, they're trying to, some of the staff are off, like, trying to make sure that some of the other patients don't find out about the situation, because they'll try and help. Some of them might try and help. And like you discover that, you know, one of the other mad engineers is like seeing what's going on. Is like, oh, don't worry. I can build something to subdue the vending machine. He's working on his own robot to try and fight the vending machine to dismantle it. He's like, he's got one of the air conditioning units open. He's like bolting things to it. And
I like the idea of getting a power suit for the vending machine repairman, so you can just go in with dramatic music playing and just pull the plug out.
But the mad scientists have to build one for him, so it's like this really ramshackle power suit, kind of like a mechanical version of this some Farscape episode where they have to dress Crichton in all this armor, and he looks like the world's crappiest knight because he's just got like a big hunk of metal hanging from his front and this sort of thing that kind of matches like a sword and like a colander on his head and a bunch of like paste smeared on his face or something.
I remember that was a very special episode. I like this idea.
Sorry, I was just gonna say it was an amazing episode, but go ahead.
I was just thinking that, you know, you could get all sorts of really intelligent problem solving that will fix the robot vending machine problem at the cost of massive other problems that they're not currently interested in. Like the woman who's an AI specialist who's basically said, well, the solution here is obvious. We just set up a transmitter and allow it to upload itself to the internet. Then it'll have no interest in our vending machine in our hospital, and we can go back to doing what we were doing. And say, yeah, but what will it be doing? She's going,
Yeah, but I'll be able to get a soda, and that's the important thing.
Yes.
You get the type of people who you give them the problem statement and they just laser focus on that. It, you know, it's like, well, it solves the problem. The vending machine will work.
Yes.
You have to very carefully remind them about the possibility of collateral damage.
Yes.
Just like with a real murder hobo.
Yes. Indeed. At which point the patients continually complain, well, you need to give us better parameters for the problems you ask us about, don't you?
Why did you not list that in our assets?
Actually, that would be really cute as a way of kind of indicating to the players that these people are actually on side is that if after a while or into like the second game or something, somebody poses them an emergency problem and somebody does the really laser focus thing and you realize that they're kind of that the other patients are starting to hold up flashcards that they've made of no, pay attention to collateral damage and kind of trying to help each other out.
The idea of flashcards to remind themselves. Or like one of them's got it scribbled on the back of his hand in like permanent marker that he just refreshes every morning.
Yes.
This is like, do not like machines must not spew gamma rays or something like that. It's like whatever individual problem they're always having with their machines. Like, it's like idiosyncratic.
He just has like tattooed to his body like memento, so when he has a shower, he's like, these are the things I should not do today.
Yeah, but the AI was just like, just on her hands, just do not create Skynet.
I like the idea of the shower because it means that the players can kind of have this kind of it's wonderful and endearing at the same time as completely useless thing of talking to somebody who turns out to have tattooed all the instructions on themselves, and you ask them as well, do you think this is helping your process, and get the response of yes, I haven't invented anything dangerous in the shower for weeks.
Yes,
I like the idea that what they have on the cue cards or tattooed on is something that the players have said, and it's just absolutely verbatim.
No, not every solution calls for a death robot. In fact, very few situations call for a death robot. We will tell
somebody in the background is scribble, 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 scribble.
We will tell you explicitly if and when the situation demands a death robot.
Which sets it up for a fantastic running gag. Okay, the vending machine, how are we going to deal with it? No, Jeremy, it does not involve a death robot.
And the great, like, you know, if you go with your long-running campaign with a sort of build-up and, like, season climax, like a great season closer is like, Jeremy, it is time for the death robot.
Yes!
This is the happiest day of Jeremy's life.
There is sorry, you should go.
I had a notion that kind of skittered off from the reference to a plausibly effective Arkham Asylum. The notion, initially I thought, well, maybe it's like a day spa for mad scientists when they, you know, their mwahaha has lost its mojo and they want to try and, you know, they want to relax and sort of get back into things. But the thing that followed on from that was the possibility of a really tragic PC or NPC who's like a recovering mad, and, you know, the problems that they could solve using mad science, and it's just a little freeze ray. It's not even a death ray. It's just a freeze ray. And the idea of them struggling with this sort of this compulsion that they have to, you know, blow stuff up.
I would be remiss if I did not mention A Miracle of Science at this point.
It's a good story, and they're never going to release Volume 2 as a book, and it makes me sad.
I'm thinking that the trying to, you know, function normally, but dealing with this compulsion to blow shit up is a great thing for player characters that you just fate compel them all the time with it.
Mm.
Like, wouldn't you really, really like to set this place on fire right now? Wouldn't that be much faster? Wouldn't this problem be solved much more easily if you just threw an incendiary device?
The termite problem would be dealt with if you simply destroyed the entire place and rebuilt it using advanced nanotechnology.
I think, yeah, you know, wanting to throw incendiary bombs is basically something I should put as an aspect on every Fate character I ever play from now on. But because it tends to be just a compel on me when I'm in RPG games. Like, you know what, if my character has access to fire, I'm probably going to want to set something on fire.
The whole thing of Jeremy, it is time for the death robot, reminds me of an episode of Oglaf, which we should also recommend because it's horrible. And there's one episode where a king is being visited by a series of advisors posing problems, and this court advisor keeps popping up with the idea that the solution would be a labyrinth. And the king's basically saying, look, when is a labyrinth ever going to be the solution to a problem that we hear at court? I mean, honestly. And the last panel is someone bursting in and say, "Sire, sire, your wife has given birth to a terrible man-eating monster." And then the last panel is the king going, "What?" While the advisor goes, and there's just no, you know, that's where it finishes.
Nice.
I feel if we're recommending Oglaf, we should drop the disclaimer that it's wildly not safe for work.
Yes, but is it any less safe for work than us?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, because you can listen to us through headphones.
True.
You make a compelling point.
Where there are frames of Oglaf that if I had on my screen at work at the wrong time, I would be fired.
Yes. It is.
There are frames where you wouldn't?
Yes, there are some of them.
Look, I think we should just the fact that the archive is ordered by things that are safe for work, they don't make any claims about anything else, is probably something we should mention.
Yeah.
We could possibly unpack a miracle of science for this too, in terms of how the setting relates to what we're talking about, and possibly whether it can be used as a springboard for other ideas. The basic idea is that it's discovered that mad science is a disease. It's a mimetic disease.
Okay.
And it makes people basically follow this ongoing mental pattern in which they build terrible things but also try to infect others. And there's this police force of former mad scientists who go out and try to work people through the sequence of the meme disease quickly in hopefully controlled circumstances before they, build anything too catastrophic. It raises some very interesting questions about the setting at large. But on an unrelated note, I used Oglaf in an educational context and possibly shouldn't have done. Whoops.
Possibly.
Well, you teach at a university. Who cares?
Yeah, I don't care if I taught my kids anything from Oglaf because I have preschoolers.
Yeah, it might be worth keeping them away.
Or it might be safer because they wouldn't get it. No, wait, I'm probably wrong there, aren't I?
But the parents might object to all the images. But yeah, I'm not sure you
need
to worry.
Cartoons.
Yeah, I'm not sure you need to worry about doing it at university, Kevin.
Well, have we basically run out of ideas?
I had the tiniest fragment of one that may not go anywhere and is quite different than everybody else's. Ooh.
Lay it on us.
Basically, I just ignored, couldn't make anything of the blah ha 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 part, and I just it only hurts when I laughed, and I just was thinking of abdominal pain. So I just had this idea of a game of nanoscale surgery where basically you're just a team of surgeons that shrink themselves down and get injected into a person's body to try and fix them.
So it's Fantastic Voyage / Inner Space.
As surgeons, as like something that is just done routinely or at least semi-routinely in modern medical practice. Somehow it's easier to do to shrink down real people than to build nanobots because drama.
I am imagining a surgical where you've got a top flight surgeon and his surgical team, where you've got the surgeon, you've got the surgeon's navigator, and you've got the combat squad, as it were, whose job it is to keep the body's various defense mechanisms away for long enough to fix the problem.
Basically, ooh. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it could be, you can either shrink them literally or just do telepresence like they did when Futurama riffed on it.
I'd shrink them literally.
If they're literally shrunk, you could have an engineer also who's inexplicably smeared with grease.
Yeah. Presumably they have a little ship then to get around in the body. And yeah, basically it's trying to make a game out of, I forget the titles of the thing, but yeah, Fantastic Voyage, whatever it is. And they're trying to possibly diagnose and at least repair whatever the problem is going on inside a person's body.
Nice.
And that's more or less all I was capable of coming up with for this one.
The temptation would be to turn it into some sort of dungeon crawl, because you are very much hacking your way through the dungeon in order to reach the bottom of the stairs, turn right, fight the monster, and retrieve the treasure. I mean, in this case, the monster is probably some sort of arterial graft, but...
Well, if you're doing surgery for an injury, then you've got a lot of elements of the dungeon crawl there, because you've got, possibly bacterial infection forming because of the, break in the skin. So you've got little... Streptococcus bacteria running around that you've got to fight on the way in. getting thicker, you know, more of them as you get towards the site of the injury. You've got the sort of neutral element of the body's own defenses that as long as they're not paying attention to you, they are helping you. But at any point, they might suddenly decide that you're the threat that they need to attack because they're not that bright.
I am now finding it difficult not to think of this as Osmosis Jones, the RPG. Because Osmosis Jones was a fantastic film from a certain point of view, and bloody awful from others. Almost the entire plot occurs inside Bill Murray.
Interesting. I know of the movie and its vague premise, but I never did see it. So
it's basically a police procedural buddy cop movie set with the protagonist being a fast-talking, rules-breaking white blood cell and the very rules-oriented cold medication who gets taken partway through, and they're both manifestly outgunned.
Ah, yes. Okay.
With the cold medication voiced by David Hyde Pierce, I think?
Yes.
Who voiced the white blood cell?
Chris Rock.
Okay. Okay, it is what I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Yep. It's a strange film, but not bad.
The whole surgery thing being a dungeon call reminds me of the episode of Futurama where Fry gets infected with a parasite colony that is upgrading the premises so that he starts to become smarter and healthier.
And he
figures this out and has a complete existential crisis because he can't tell if people are liking him or if they're liking what the parasite colony are building him into. So he shrinks himself down and injects him into himself because it's Futurama and we have
using telepresence robots. That's what I was mentioning before.
Earlier
to figure out what's on, they all go they make little robot duplicates of all of them because the professor just has a machine for making tiny robot duplicates of people. Because they can make them on demand with a tiny robot duplicate Planet Express ship. Or maybe they shrink the Planet Express ship. I don't remember. Then later, Fry makes a robot duplicate of himself, goes into himself, and like you were going to say, starts...
Everything.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting problem to have. I've now kicked back to the mad science, mad hospital thing where you've got someone who approaches the PCs and says that they're concerned because they built a miniature duplicate of the hospital and duplicates of everyone inside it and they think that there's going to be a problem. It says, what's that? My duplicates escaped and are taking over.
I thought it would be more efficient for space if we miniaturized the entire hospital and everyone inside it. We now have a sparrow issue.
I thought it would be more efficient if we miniaturized the hospital and everyone in it. So I made a duplicate small hospital with robot duplicates. It was like, but then there's just already them there. We can't miniaturize ourselves. Okay, maybe I didn't think it through all the way. But the problem is now, I think the robot duplicates are colonizing Frank.
Also, some of them may be building an embiggening ray.
So it's small, illogical steps combined with it seemed like a good idea at the time.
And like, or it partially turns into that bit in The Simpsons where Lisa accidentally creates a very tiny civilization that's evolving at a much faster rate.
Yes.
And they eventually build a shrink ray to like have her join them. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, can you just return me to normal size ray? And they're like, an embiggening ray? What? That's impossible.
Also, the fact that they launch a stellar expedition to shoot Bart in the face while he sleeps because he's been a dick to them. I kind of like the idea that a lot of the problems people will be having in the hospital is inventing things to help the process of helping mad scientists get better when the thing that you're trying to teach them is don't invent crazy things.
Yeah.
So they've got the message, but the methodology is escaping them.
You know, you don't want to make them stop inventing things ever, but you're trying to get them to think through, like, you know, don't over-engineer for the problem at hand and, you know, things like that. And meanwhile, their first instinct is to, oh, we have this problem with a vending machine. Well, I should definitely be, you know, there's shrink rays, AI upgrades, nuclear-powered soda delivery engines.
That idea.
It just needs to have a fuse replaced. The guy's coming with the fuse tomorrow. But I can fix it now.
Sorry. So hilariously, you're playing a game in which a bunch of role players are trying to promote the idea of proportional response.
Chirp, Chirp.
That does seem like it would be difficult.
Yes, this coming from a field of hobby, of enjoyment, where, what? The guards won't allow me to take my sword into town? We slaughter everybody! Is unfortunately not as much of a joke as you might think.
A difficulty in playing it in that if the players or the staff trying to calm everybody down, it means the GM just gets to have all of the fun of describing all the crazy, crazy things that happen. Because it's the NPCs that are like actually cutting loose.
Possibly something in one of the fairly collaborative type systems.
I'm thinking like that. Even like Fate isn't collaborative enough for that because it's very players and then GM is separate.
It could be done because you've got systems like the Atomic Robo RPG, which we could basically rend and maim and spindle and mutilate until it did what we wanted it to do, in terms of that it's got invention systems where, as written, the question isn't are you successfully inventing what you want to invent, but who out of the GM and the player gets to decide what goes wrong. If we messed with that and kind of threw it open to the group, and so you had the slightly competitive thing of who gets to decide what goes wrong, and so different players could pitch, I think someone's building this, and then there's a kind of rolling and bidding for other people contributing what goes wrong.
Even just keeping a very similar mechanic, you know, the invention, you know, who gets to decide what goes wrong, the GM or the player, and it's NPCs are doing that. The players essentially are making a role just to be the ones that control what goes wrong with the invention to minimize it. Or, you know, first they're rolling a persuade to try and get the person not to make an invention, the NPC maybe. But if they do, then there's a role of who gets to decide how horribly out of hand it goes. And so it's like you're sort of inverting the normal invention mechanic in that the character doing the inventing isn't the player, but the player still gets to make that role. Essentially, the player is almost in the role of the GM, and the GM's in the role of a player in terms of how you would normally use the invention mechanic.
Interesting.
Because the player is the one that's trying to maintain some level of control. But the person doing the inventing is also one more prone to more disastrous consequences because they're mad people. So the player's trying... Yeah, the player would be... You know, there'd be some sort of invention role to see, can the players at least successfully direct the inevitable problems with the invention in a way that they already have some ability to control? Or is it just going to be something worse that they have to deal with in an entirely new way? Like, you know, if currently, I'm thinking like, you know, if currently whatever situation is going on has set off all the fire sprinklers and there's water raining down from the ceiling and you failed to convince your mad engineer not to build some crazy device, but if the player's role to say, okay, what goes wrong with it, then you might say, well, it starts setting fires, which at least is okay because the fire system is already working.
Yeah.
I had a brief notion about some sort of dystopian future where laughter was illegal or something. That just felt like a really kind of 60s sci-fi film.
I reminded of something that is actually, I thought of it even more fragmentary than my surgery idea, but it kind of almost connects to Charlie's idea of the joy creating / sucking monster in a way, where there is some sort of supernatural or alien thing that sort of feeds off laughter in kind of a more, even more sinister way than Charlie was. So you play a squad of people that are trying to prevent NPCs from laughing for some length of time. Like you're trying to go around, like, you know, not maybe permanently in a dystopian society, but like maybe it's like a Star Trek episode. You're on a starship and there's a incorporeal alien that when somebody laughs, it can eat their brains or something. And so you're just like a small squad of the crew trying to go around and like keep everybody mirthless while the science officer tries to figure out how to purge this stupid alien.
Well, see, everybody in the party would just be, you know, every modern, gritty, you know, pissed off protagonist that's been in, like, most of the games on my shelf. You know, just kind of there grunting, saying, oh, my pain, my past, it's terrible. But you could only send those assholes in because anybody with another kind of personality risks making someone else laugh.
Yeah, you're trying to both embody and like enforce that the mannerisms on everybody else of like a 90s comic book.
Yep. So many pouches.
Or a 2000s a late 2000s superhero movie.
I'm imagining just dreadful stand-up comedians.
That would work too. The one thing that is absolutely impossible to laugh at is bad comedy.
Oh God. Okay, you've basically got a game where people are wandering around telling god awful dad jokes.
No, dad jokes are hilarious. Shut up. The worse, the better.
Right.
So maybe I was wrong. It is possible to laugh at bad comedy. Just like really, really dreary attempted comedy movies. Like some terrible Wayans Brothers movie or something that you're showing to people, or
do something really funny to lure this creature into the open, but because they're all so inherently unfunny, it's just impossible for them to do. And like perhaps the plot is trying to teach them how to be funny without laughing, so they can get this thing without any dying.
Oh yeah, they're the only action heroes you have on board, so they could fight the alien. But they're so grim and humorless that the alien's only going around the undefended people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a tabletop RPG and you're just playing yourself, you can just steal people from pop culture. It's just like Cable and Christian Bale's Batman and the Superman from Man of Steel. Just like the grimmest versions of these superheroes possible. And just somebody's trying to like no, you can laugh at things. Like, for God's sake, you're like a billionaire with the coolest toys in the world. You can fucking fly. Stop brooding. And they're just sitting there, but my family. It's like, it's been 40 years. Get over it a bit.
Billionaire, go get some counseling.
I forget what games you've talked about, but there's games with mechanics for when you succeed too well. So you're trying to turn Christian Bale Batman into Batman the Animated Series Batman, maybe.
Or 60s and Batman.
No, I was going to say, you succeed too far, and instead he becomes 60s Batman.
Teenagers from Outer Space did have a you succeed too much mechanic, because it was Teenagers from Outer Space. The amount by which you succeed too much was rolled every session on a d6. So potentially, succeeding too much is you beat it by one. Presumably that's how you get Adam West Batman.
You're trying to get maybe somewhere between Tim Burton Batman and 90s animated Batman. Because 90s animated Batman like told jokes and occasionally.
It was at least wryly funny.
Yeah. Like when they made the Justice League show, Batman kind of became the comic relief and it was amazing.
Huh.
Because he just was like, he wasn't like, he was serious, but he just made like wry sarcastic comments that were actually hilarious.
And he got revealed to be just like the biggest otaku type person because he could write off exactly how many Hawk Girl hate like groups there were online and how many webs there were. And he's not even looking at the screen as he's doing this. He's just doing I just know.
And let us not forget the episode where he spends the entire 20-minute runtime trying to find a pig who is Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And at the end, he has to sing.
Wow.
It was a good show.
Apparently. They went in some strange directions with that.
But yeah, that was... So that's sort of the exact opposite of what I had thought of with It Only Hurts When I Laugh, but I like it better, of trying to make grimdark people... Make grimdark action heroes, like, less obnoxious so that they can actually attract the attention of the joy-stealing monster.
And then punch it.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's even... Even the happiest versions of Superman, he basically is just trying to figure out who he can punch to solve the problem. And like when it's a team up, it's not even that. It's Superman is waiting for Batman to figure out who Superman needs to punch to solve the problem.
That is distressingly accurate, yes.
It's also, you know, it's most RPG campaigns too. If there's any element of mystery, you're trying to figure out who you need to go punch and or tie up and or murder to solve the situation.
This is true.
I think I've come to just in my RPG campaigns, just basically stating that directly when we're proposing plans. I'm like, okay, we need to figure out who needs to be punched to fix everything. How do we, I GM, I roll to see who I need to punch.
Ah, yes, the who do I punch skill.
Yeah.
That sounds like we've kind of reached the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've mined those ideas for all they're worth and possibly kept digging in the case of at least one of them. So at this point, I shall say good night, audience.
Good night.
And hope that other people will join in that as well.
Good night.
Good night, folks.
Good night. I have been and always shall be, John.
Next time on the Big Red Couch.
Hello, audience. We got a lot of feedback on episode 50, plus some on some other episodes, so next time we're going to be doing a listener response show, provisionally called Ghosts in Overdrive.
Want to hear more of our shenanigans? Then go to hoarde.net and click on the button that looks like a couch. The Big Red Couch is released under Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported from creativecommons.org. All music on the show comes from the album Universal Fluff Theory by Krakatoa. Visit them at krakatoa.com or follow the link from our page. See you next time!